This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. University of Notre Dame sociology professor Jorge Bustamante will discuss immigration during an event Wednesday at Western Michigan University. Coming up, I'll talk with Bustamante about the humanitarian, economic, and international implications of immigration policy. But first, numbers from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention show an increase in the suicide rate for teens and adolescents nationwide. The rate of girls dying by suicide doubled between 2007 and 2015. We're going to discuss this very difficult subject with Susan Davis. She is Mobile Crisis Response Manager for Family and Children's Services of Kalamazoo. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me here today.
When you see those numbers from the Centers for Disease Control about suicide for teens, as well as even some young people who are not yet teenagers, what do they say to you?
They say to me that we need to do a better job of talking about this subject, looking for the signs when it comes to our youth, and looking at what are the preventative measures with our youth and with adults too. But with our youth, this is where we have an opportunity to catch things early and change them.
Is there an indication, or maybe even when we talk about suicide, is there a decent theory about what could be causing these numbers to go up?
Some of the research that's out there right now is not necessarily what's causing them to go up, but what can be factors that contribute to youth thinking about suicide and taking their life by suicide. And that can be that early childhood trauma. So youth that are physically abused, sexually abused, emotionally abused, neglected. Youth that have an early diagnosed significant mental health illness, especially major depression. Youth that start to use substances at an early age. So those are some of the things that are some indicators and that can be then resulting in youth committing suicide. And the other thing to think about with our youth is their brains aren't fully developed. And so that part of the brain that helps with decision making and helps you understand long-term consequences isn't fully developed till you're in your 20s.
Is there an age at which we could say that trouble signs could start showing up? I mean, some of the statistics we have here are for children as young as 10. Mm-hmm. At what age might there be some sort of a red flag?
It can be even earlier. I mean, we have been called out on kids that are 6 years old who are talking about killing themselves. And so looking for those signs of withdrawing, those signs of sadness, the signs of not wanting to be involved in those activities, talking vaguely about not wanting to be around, people would be better off if I wasn't here. Sometimes we hear those things and we ignore them because they're difficult to hear. We don't want to ask the next question. What does that mean? And having age-appropriate open conversations about suicide. It's a scary word for a lot of people.
And when we talk age appropriate here, I would assume that these conversations are quite different with somebody 10 as opposed to somebody 15, 16, et cetera.
Yes. It's how you word it. It sounds bad to say normalizing that conversation, but we don't hesitate to talk to our youth about using drugs and alcohol. We don't hesitate to talk to them about stranger danger. And so we need to talk to them about when things get tough in our lives, how we manage that, and that there are ways to manage the toughest problems, and it doesn't mean that we have to end our life in order to do it.
So you mentioned the idea of someone being withdrawn, maybe sad, talking about maybe it'd be better if I'm not here. Are there some other things that a parent might look for, or anybody else who's around a child regularly?
Those are really the big ones. Sometimes it's just picking up on a behavior change. So you've noticed that there's been a change in your child. Ask about it. I mean, it could just be a change in their behavior. And one of the things that gets missed a lot of times in our youth when we talk about depression is one of the classic signs of youth depression is anger and irritability. And so that gets missed and gets kind of written off as a teenager. But it really can be a significant sign. So if there's any change in that behavior, it's asking, hey, what's going on? Has something happened? You know, how are you feeling? Tell me about what's going on.
Is there a good way to distinguish between sort of regular adolescent teenage angst? I think all of us who went through it can remember a time or two when we were perhaps not at our best behavior-wise, but yet a difference between that and something which is more problematic.
How long it lasts. So as adolescents, moods go up and down. Kids' moods go up and down, and that's normal. So if this is something that's lasting a more significant amount of time, and it seems more severe than what that normal moodiness might be, we all get our teenagers, our kids who go in and slam their bedroom doors, and usually they come back out after a while. So this youth may want to stay in their room all the time. Another concerning area can be, too, looking at how much time they're spending online. And, you know, what are they accessing online and what are they reading online? We are in the age of social media and bullying through social media. And so looking at our use, internet use, what are they using? You know, if there's concerns talking to a teacher at school, have they noticed the same differences? Are they not hanging out with their friends like they used to at school? So things that are lasting a little bit longer and are more severe than the typical, I didn't get my way, so now I'm mad.
The Family and Children's Services materials that I read online included watching out for maybe someone who goes from seeming to be very troubled to all of a sudden very calm. And this is something that I think people have heard over the years, that if someone has decided they are going to commit suicide, they sort of accept it, and now the trouble is going to soon be past them, so they have a calm about them. At the same time, if a teenager just continues to act out all the time, that can also be a troubling sign as well. So I guess I'm wondering, how do you know that someone has worked their way through whatever was bothering them that might have had them thinking horrible thoughts, including suicide?
Asking them, we need to know what the issue was that was bothering them, and asking them why they feel different about it, how they've solved it. Because again, with our adolescents, they can get over something very quickly. Maybe they had a fight with their boyfriend, fight with their girlfriend, fight with a friend, and then it's over. But it's also true that you need to look for that sudden change in behavior, because usually if there is a diagnosed mental health issue, like a major depressive disorder, that doesn't go away overnight. So that could be a sign. And then they talk about, and you don't see this as much in youth, giving away possessions, making sure your affairs are in order. Oftentimes with youth especially, they will leave some kind of written indication. They might post on social media saying goodbye to friends, to family. That's not always the case, but that can be something to look for. So again, it's just asking the question, wow, you seem really happy today. That's very different from how you were yesterday. And looking for the signs, those signs from the youth.
If a parent does suspect that their child is depressed and perhaps think that their child could be contemplating killing themselves, are there services available, places they can turn for help?
Yes. In Kalamazoo County, we have a variety of services. So it's always a recommendation to reach out to professional help to have an assessment done. And so in Kalamazoo County, we have a program called Mobile Crisis Response, which is a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week crisis response program for youth in Kalamazoo County that can be accessed by a parent to have a face-to-face intervention done immediately or scheduled for the next day or two. We also work with our local emergency departments, our local school systems, our local pediatricians, and responding to their locations to do immediate assessments, as well as it can be a phone call to give some guidance and support. The 211 line at Griffin is a way to access some resources. The helpline through Griffin is a way to access some resources. So there really are a lot of varieties and sources in Kalamazoo County. Our local pediatricians have gotten a lot more education on psychotropic medications, on mental health issues. So we really are very lucky here in Kalamazoo County.
What would be the checklist, I guess, you might have a parent go through if they believe that there could be some troubling behavior?
We would ask them about the behaviors, what's going on. We would, one of the things that we always ask is what's in the home. So are there weapons in the home? And what medications are in the home? A lot of times what people don't realize is when oftentimes youth for suicide go to what's an easy means. And medication can be an easy means, especially females tend to gravitate towards medications a little bit more. But many of the over-counter medications that everybody thinks it's over-the-counter and it's safe can be very deadly. And so it's getting rid of all of the medications, locking them up and securing them. So have they noticed medications missing? You know, have they noticed knives missing? You know, what maybe are some things that weren't around that, you know, that could be a means to harm themselves? You know, are they not hanging out and seeing their friends like they used to? That's a big one. If they really start withdrawing and they just don't want to talk to anybody and they can be really moody and irritable.
How hard is it to get good research on this? David Lester, who's a professor at Stockton University in New Jersey, has spent a career for the most part studying this, and yet he said to Freakonomics when they did a podcast on this, he said he can't really tell you why people commit suicide. So when you're going through the research, how do you kind of sift out what really seems to be getting at this and yet what might still be leaving us in a fog?
It's talking to people who have thought about killing themselves. Those are the only people you can talk to. And it's asking them, what were they thinking? It's asking them about life experiences. Because one of the things that some of the research is showing, it's those early childhood life experiences when there are traumatic events that they experience, abuse, neglect, that can start to shape how things are managed in the future. And we have to remember that when those traumatic events are happening for them, their brains are still developing. So it literally can change how the brain functions and develops. And so that's where the early development of our youth is so critical and what they experience during that time. And then people are going to experience traumatic events. And then it's helping them learn how to manage and deal with those events. Life's not easy all the time. And we have to start teaching our kids young, how do you manage those things? How do you manage adversity?
Netflix this year debuted a show called 13 Reasons Why, which was about a teenager committing suicide and leaving behind the recordings which explained who it was that she said caused her to commit suicide. This prompted a lot of controversy. Some people said it glamorized it. You wrote about this for Family and Children's Services. What do you think the show did in terms of perhaps getting people to at least talk about this?
It did a great job getting people to talk about the subject of suicide, especially the subject of suicide in our youth. Kids were watching this. Kids were talking about it. Adults were talking about it with the youth. And so that was critical and important that we're okay talking about it. We're okay talking about the word suicide and the word killing yourself. So that was, it was a gateway to conversations. And it's a very complicated topic. It's a very complicated show in all of the areas that it looks at. And I think one of the most important things that we always need to send the message is that there is an option to solve whatever is going on. Suicide is not the only option. It's not the only answer. It's the final answer. And there are lots of options to solve our problems.
And is just having a conversation about the subject of suicide, especially when we're talking young people, difficult to just even get started because the subject is so horrific?
It is. I often find when I do presentations and talk to people about suicide in youth and how do they ask the question, and I say you have to use the word suicide, and they're horrified. They look at me with this look of terror on their face, like, you want me to use that word? I might give them the idea. And like, I guarantee you, you're not giving them the idea. Research shows that they're already thinking about it. And as soon as somebody brings it up to them, it's an instant relief because it's like, oh, I can talk about this. with this person. I don't have to hold the secret inside of me. Somebody has asked me what I'm thinking about. It's the tough thing. It's a very tough conversation to have. And there are ways to start the conversation that make it more normalizing.
Susan Davis, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Susan Davis is Mobile Crisis Response Manager for Family and Children's Services of Kalamazoo.